Good evening, everybody. It's good to see everybody out this evening. You know, usually when we guys get up here, Donnie's not here. Drew, I know how nerve-wracking it is now. So I hope y'all afford me a little water. I usually bring some water when I'm going to talk for about an hour. Just kidding. I'm actually been put on some restrictions to my voice. I've got some vocal issues. So I hope everyone will be able to hear me tonight. I'm supposed to restrain from talking really loud. That may or may not hold true. We'll see. So, growing up, I remember as a little kid watching Bob Ross. Some of you may know who I'm talking about. Some of you may not have a clue. If you're smiling and a little bit of a giggle, you know who I'm talking about simply because of his hair. But the point I'm trying to make is I remember watching him. And he would paint. Yes, I was a bored child. I watched a painting show. But the point I'm trying to make is watching him take a white canvas, some paint, and make art, he would make some beautiful stuff right there in front of your eyes. And we think of art, we immediately think of painting. Painting, we think of art. You'll probably recognize painting like this, Thomas Kincaid. That's one we all know a little more. Paints beautiful pictures. If you've ever been in one of his galleries, you know why they call him the painter of light. It's truly amazing to see the detail and what he puts into it. But art can come in many different forms. Quilting, sewing. My kids are getting into sewing, doing a wonderful job. Growing up, I watched my granny do sewing. I watched her make quilts, beautiful quilts. It's amazing to see what someone can do with a needle and thread. Sorry about that. Also growing up, and I promise this is not a lesson about me growing up, but growing up, watching sports, watching these guys play a simple game, game that a lot of us play in the backyard, watching what they put into it and how they played the game, it was amazing. We remember guys like Michael Jordan. And a lot of times in watching him play the game, you would hear the phrases, wow, he turns playing basketball into an art. Watching him play, it's an art form. One guy in particular, and I'm sorry about this, Evan, but Peyton Manning. This guy's a super quarterback, even though he didn't come to the Titans. But he is one of the best quarterbacks there is. And watching him play the game, as you will hear people say, watching him dissect a defense, it's amazing. It's an art. There's an art to it. He plays with an art. You hear the phrase art form. I've said it a lot of times. You go beyond just doing something. It's not just something to pass the time. Where am I going with this? And I promise I am, so bear with me. Driving down the road one day, I saw on a sign, had a message that said, the art of marriage. And I thought to myself, you know, marriage is an art. There's an art to it. And when you think about comparing marriage to an art, what do we do with art? We value it. We put a price tag on it. Sometimes you hear people say it's priceless. We value art. We need to value our marriage. This day and age, too many people are not. Too many people are throwing it to the side. So that's why today I want to talk to you about the art of marriage. And I realize marriage is a delicate subject. Some people will say, well, you need to see a counselor. You need to be careful what you tell people. You need to see a preacher. Or refer to someone that's been married for a really long time. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a preacher. I'm not that old, but I have been married for 18 years next Sunday. See, guys, I remember my anniversary, but I'll be married for 18 years. I think that's pretty good, even if I'm guilty of patting myself on the back and my wife. That's pretty good for this day and age. That's pretty good. I also watched my grandparents as they were married for 54 years when my grandfather died. My granny, if I best remember, she lived to be in her late 80s. There's no doubt in my mind, if he had matched her in those years, they would still be married. Watching them, I learned a lot of good examples. But then also, sadly, I'm a child of divorce. I was 18 when my parents got a divorce. I was 18, and I see the effects it had on me, and to this day still has on me. I can't imagine what it has on younger people when they have to watch their parents go through it. I've seen all sides of marriage. Doesn't make me an expert. I'm not up here to claim that I am. I just want to talk to you about the subject because I care about it. I see the problems with it. I see people disregarding it. And I want us all to work at it. We're seeing too many marriages torn apart. We're seeing too many fathers and mothers being selfish, shattering the dreams of lives, of their spouse and their children. They're being bad examples to their children. They're being bad examples to those around them. It's sickening. It's frustrating. We've got to combat this. We've got to stay strong. So what do we need to do to be strong? Think about the art of marriage. When you think about that, you compare it to an art. And I'll keep referencing art or a craft. You look at what goes into it. When someone starts a project, when someone starts to create art, there's preparation, there's passion, and there's persistence. In talking about preparation, obviously, you're going to prepare. You're going to think ahead. You're going to plan. I think of painting, as I mentioned. Someone's getting ready to paint something. They're going to look to see, do they have the right paints? They're going to prepare and plan that they've got the brushes they need. They're going to think, well, what do I want to accomplish? I like woodworking. I know some of you others do too. I like building furniture. Starting a project, one of the big things is you look and you think, what do I need to keep it together? A few weeks back, Drew talked about following a pattern. He brought out the verse, Hebrews 8:5. It says that you make all things according to the pattern which was shown you on the mountain. According to the pattern. We have a pattern. We have a pattern for marriage. So what is that pattern? Where can we find it? Obviously the Bible. If you will, turn to Matthew chapter 19. We'll look at a few verses there. The Bible gives us our pattern. It tells us what we need. It tells us how to do things. It tells us how to keep it together. The Bible tells us how important marriage is. The importance of the relationship. It's a relationship that was instituted by God. It's a relationship that's second only to God. It tells us in verse 4 that it's male and female. And he answered and said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? It's one man, one woman. Not multiples of each. Not a man and a man. Not a woman and a woman. Male and female. Plain and simple. It also tells us in verses 5 and 6, it's for life. And said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. Focusing in on therefore what therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. God joined it. He joins it. He wants it to stay that way. You can look over in Romans chapter 7. Verse 2 says, for the married woman is bound by law to her husband while he is living. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law concerning the husband. While he is living. It's till death. It's for life. No, ladies, don't be thinking about knocking off your husbands. Because remember, thou shalt not murder. Okay? Point I'm trying to make. It's not temporary. Marriage is not something to be thrown away, thrown to the side. In preparation and preparing, you need to be ready and know and be devoted to one person for life. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 5. We also know by reading the Bible that we have our places in marriage. The wife submits. Verse 22. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. And husbands, husband is the head. Verse 23. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. I'm going to have some more thoughts on that a little bit later. But we follow the pattern set by God. We keep God as our focus. We focus on Him. Make Him our priority. And our marriage will be in good shape. Matter of fact, somebody may ask you, what shape is your marriage? Some of you may know where I'm going with this. Some of you may have seen this before. But you want to tell them it's a triangle. And after the weird look you get, you can explain. The shape of my marriage is a triangle. And here's what I mean by this. You have the husband. You have the wife. Notice they're both smiling. Very important. They're both smiling. God is their focus. God is the priority. And they both live their life growing closer to God. And as they both grow closer to God, they grow closer to each other, making for a great marriage, strong marriage. We've got to stay focused on God. We've got to know what He tells us. We've got to follow His wisdom. I appreciate the reading this evening in Proverbs chapter 5. It hit awful close to what I was going to read. I'm in chapter 2. Proverbs chapter 2, starting in verse 6, reading till 6, through 16. For the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice, and He preserves the way of His godly ones. Then you will discern righteousness and justice and equity in every good course, for wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will guard you. Understanding will watch over you to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness, who delight in doing evil and rejoice in the perversity of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways, to deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her words. Boy, that sounds like marriage today and the problems that it's encountering. That's why we need to remember the wisdom of God. That's why we need to remember chapter 2, chapter 5, and the wisdom that God tells us. Also, know going into marriage, especially young people, marriage is good. It's a good thing. People will sometimes, and I know I've been guilty of it, guys getting ready to get married, you kind of pick at him a little bit, you kind of rib him a little bit about it, and that's fun and all, but a lot of times, and I've had it done to me, it can go overboard. People will make it out that marriage is horrible, it's nothing but a burden, that it's not fun, and this will just be drilled into your head. Marriage is a good thing. 1 Timothy 4:4 says, for everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with gratitude. God created marriage. So for everything created by God is good. It's a good thing. You need to prepare for marriage. You need to set our minds to it. You know, I think back to an athlete. They play their game. They practice. They're serious about it. They have fun with it, but they're serious. They know it's important. It's important to them. And they're ready to give their all. They're focused. They have a want to. And they're determined. I know somebody else that had these attributes, and is a great example for us. That's Christ. We can look to Christ as an example. Turn back over to Ephesians chapter 5. In Ephesians, it likens marriage to Christ in the church. And we can see that Christ had a passion for the church. Back to our art. A good artist will have passion for what they do. They're going to love what they do. They're going to put their all into it. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself up for her. Christ loved the church. We need to love our marriage. Love our spouse. Don't be afraid. Don't be like the guy that said, that the lady said, you never tell me you love me. And he says, well, I told you I loved you on the day we married. Isn't that good enough? No, it's not. Tell her you love her all the time. Don't be afraid to do that. Husbands, in Colossians 3:19, it says, husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Just reiterating, love your wives. Love. And then in Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 4, or 3 and 4, it says, older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good. In verse 4, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. You've got to practice love. That's why it's so important to think ahead, to plan ahead. Know that the one you're marrying is the right one. Then the love is going to flow so much more natural. And guys, especially now, pay attention to Genesis 29:20. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. How many of you said that to your wives lately? Loving you is but only a few days. That's love, guys. That's what we need to have. And we all know that, reading on, he served another 7 years. You know, he loved her. There was no doubt about that. We should have this same love, this same determination for our spouse, for our marriage. Honor. Ephesians 5:27 says that he might present himself to the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. Glory, holy. Honor defined. Says to give special recognition to. Special recognition. Jesus knew it was special. He knew the church was special. He knew it was from God. What did I say at the beginning? Marriage is from God. It's special. We need to recognize that and honor it. Hebrews 13:4 says, marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. 1 Peter 3:7, you husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. You've got to show honor. Honor your marriage, honor your wife, honor your husband. We also can learn about cherish. Verse 29, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. Just as Christ also does the church. Does what? Cherishes it. As our example, we see that Christ cherished it. We should cherish our marriage. Cherish says to hold dear, to keep or cultivate with care and affection. Pay attention to cultivate. That'll show up a little bit later. But cultivate. You keep working at it. It takes some work. There's care and there's affection. Don't be afraid to show your affection. Don't be afraid. Guys and girls, show your affection. Let them know you love them. Love, honor, cherish. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Most of us say that in our wedding vows. But I'm afraid too many times we really don't know what it means. We just say it because we're reciting it. But love, honor, cherish. They mean something. They should mean something to your marriage. They should be the backbone of your marriage. Christ practiced all this. Love, honor, cherish. He held to it. He held to it so much that he died for the church. Guys might jump up and say, well, I'd die for my wife. Well, good. But will you live for her? Will you live for your marriage? Christ gave himself up, not just in death, but in life. We got to give up ourselves. We got to give up our wants. We can't be selfish. Too much selfishness going on in marriages today. It's not about me. Everyone wants it to be me. Me, me, me. What do I get out of it? It's not about me. You got to live for each other. There's things that you just have to give up. You got to focus on the other one. Helper. I'm going to get in some dangerous ground here. But if you think about it, guys especially, loving your wife, you're naturally going to want to be a helper. You're going to want to help. Well, wait a minute. What about head of the house and the wife submits and all that? I'm not taking anything away from that. And I know we read in Ephesians 5, 22 through 25, and in Colossians 3, 18 and 19. I blame it on the PowerPoint. I'm faster than it is. We know our places. But in these commands of head of the house and wife submits, love keeps showing up. Husbands, love your wives. If you love, you honor, you cherish, you're naturally going to want to help out. There is a healthy balance. And quite sternly, guys, being the head doesn't give you the right to be a calloused, uncaring taskmaster. Think about this. We know God is in charge. We all recognize that. And we all recognize that we submit to Him. David recognized this. He knew God was in charge. But in Psalm 54:4, he says, "Behold, God is my helper." What? My helper. God that we submit to. God is my helper. God helps us. Guys, who are we to think that we shouldn't help out in our own marriage? Genesis 2:18. "I will make him a helper, not a slave." Genesis 2:24. "For this reason a man shall leave his mother and his father, his father and his mother, and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." You're one. You're a team. Well, David, sorry to tell you, but I'm the head of my house. I wear the pants. But who quietly tells you they're unzipped? You need your wife, guys. You don't have all the answers. You're not all the end-all, be-all. You're a team. You need each other. You need to work together in all things. The big things, the little things, through life's troubles, the good times, the bad times. I mentioned the little things. Thinking back to my grandfather, my grandmother. And some of you heard me tell this before in class, but I just can't help but to tell it again and share it with everybody. Because my grandfather was kind of your typical tough guy. Actually, he was a big teddy bear. But he was a tough guy. He served a few years in the military, in the Navy. He served in World War II. He worked on high voltage lines for TVA. But routinely, you would see him happily vacuuming the whole house, helping my grandmother. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Some may dispute me on that. But it's a team effort. It's a team effort. You work together, even in the little things. You know, we read about two shall become one. Going back to woodworking and furniture, I think of wood glue. When you talk about becoming one, you talk about a bond. I think of wood glue. You know, it doesn't just glue wood together. It bonds it. It fuses it together. It literally becomes one piece of wood. And if you don't believe me, take a glued piece of wood and break it apart and see what happens. It's not a clean break. You're a team. Yes, I'm going back to football again. Sorry. But I think of a football team. The coach is in charge. But they play together as a team. They pull off of each other's strengths. Wives have strengths. Husbands have strengths. You got to pull from each one of them. You got to work together as a team. How can you work together if you work apart? How are you going to get through stuff if you're continually working apart? David, I love my husband or wife. I help. But is it with the right attitude? Look back, or if we look back at Colossians 3:19, it says, "Husbands, love your wives, and do not be embittered against them." Ladies, look at Proverbs 31:12. "She does him good and not evil all the days of her life." Don't be embittered. Don't be grudging. You may help out. You may say you love her. But do you say, "I love you"? All right, fine, I'll help. Don't be embittered. Ladies, the same for you. Don't be embittered against each other. And in marriage, yes, there's going to be some work at it. There's going to be persistence. You've got to have persistence. You've got to stay with it. Think back to the art again. An artist or craftsman, they're going to stay with their project. They're going to stay with it. They're going to see it through to the end. They're going to be persistent about it. With persistence, you're going to keep working at it. And you're never going to give up or give in. Jesus kept working at it. And always refer back to Jesus as our example in everything. Jesus kept working at it. I put the Gospels up here. I didn't put up one or two verses. I just put the Gospels up here because we can read through the Gospels and we can read countless times of what Jesus had to go through, what he had to put up with. We can see and we can read about Christ's determination. You know, a lot of things tried to get in his way, tried to hinder him. They tried to deviate him from his goal. Same today with marriages. There's so much out there that tries to get in the way. It tries to pull you apart. These things pull at a husband. These things pull at a wife. There's things that pull at a marriage. And I'm not just talking about, most of the time when we talk about marriage problems, we all focus in and say adultery, adultery, adultery. There can be other things that try to tear a marriage apart. It can be jobs, job loss, job changes, finances. It can be a lot of things. Big, little. A lot of times it's the husband and wife that make the little things big. They get blown out of proportion. A lot of times, you may be having problems, and you take it out on your wife, or you take it out on your husband. Words can be very hurtful. You got to remember that. You got to keep working at it. You can't back down. You can't quit. Never give up or give in. If you look over in Matthew chapter 26, this is the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus goes to pray. And you can read through here, and you can see what Jesus is going through. Verse 36, then Jesus came to them with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. And he said to them, my soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me. And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will. And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, so you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again a second time and prayed, saying, my Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done. Again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand. Jesus knew what was coming. He knew what was about to happen. He was tired. He was worn out. It says he was grieved and distressed. He could have given up, but he didn't. He didn't give up. Knowing what was coming. And then on down, in verse 53, or on down in the chapter, we read next of his arrest. And Jesus is arrested here, and he knew, again, what was about to happen. He knew what the next events were going to be. I can't imagine being in that position. I'm one of those that when I read things in the Bible, whether it's a place or whether it's an event or whether it's something going on, I try to put my mind there. I try to put myself there and think, wow, I can't fathom. I can't fathom standing there letting them arrest me, knowing the torture, the beatings, the mockery, everything that Jesus was about to go through. He knew all of this. He saw the frustration in his disciples, so much so that they were ready to die for him. They were ready to fight. They were ready to take everybody out. He saw the fear in his disciples. Jesus was compassionate. He could see the fear. He knew that they would be lost. He knew that they were going to be scared once he was gone. He could see all of this, and he could have ended it. Verse 53, or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? That's a lot. He could have ended it right there. But he didn't give up. He stayed with it. He had persistence. He stuck to the pattern. He was devoted to God and the church. Remember, we have a pattern for marriage. We need to stick to it. It's God's pattern. We need to be devoted not only to our husband or to our wife, but be devoted to God. But we always mention give up, give up, give up. Focus on never give in. These are the times people think, well, I can get away with something. I can do this and nobody will know. I can get away with it. Don't give in to temptations. Marriages are being bombarded with it. All different ways. Just outright people being very forward, down to pictures, internet, movies, TV, whatever. All avenues. Marriages are being bombarded. Temptations right and left. Back in Luke chapter 4, 1 through 13, this is where Jesus was tempted by Satan. We know here Satan tempted him three times, heavily. Jesus stood strong, though. He remained faithful. He didn't give in. Sure, I guess he could have, and then walked out and said, well, you know, I'm going to get back here, and I'm going to get back on track, and I'm going to go on, because nobody saw it. It was just me and Satan. Nobody saw it. I got away with it. It would have been all for naught. It would have been all for naught. You know, you may not actually give up, but if you live a life of giving in, you've given up. Your marriage is doomed. You hear people say, I just don't love them anymore. I fell out of love. This is the person that you said you wanted to spend the rest of your life with. This is the person you vowed your love to. You said you would love, honor, cherish until death, through sickness, through health, through whatever. You vowed your love to them. Said you'd spend everything with them. And then you say you just fell out of love? You don't love them anymore? No. You gave up. You quit. You quit on them. You quit on yourself. And most importantly, you quit on God. Because remember, we're talking about marriage instituted by God. There's things He expects. You quit on God. You got to stay with it. You got to stay strong. You got to be persistent. Work at it. Don't get bored with your spouse. They're not a car to go trading in. You can't get tired of them and think, well, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to do this. Or I'm going to go over here and I'm going to get this. They're not a car to go trading in. You know, I was guilty of that with a truck. My wife's going to grin because she's going to know what I'm talking about. I had a great truck. But I got that itch. I wanted to trade. Thought it was a good thing. Thought it was the right thing. Sounds like some of the marriages these days, some of the way people treat it. I thought it was the right thing to do. I thought, hey, I'm going to get me something else. I traded that truck, and to this day, how long ago has that been? Over 18 years ago. To this day, I still regret it. Literally, I regret it. I know, it's just a truck, David. So much would have been better. Finances, everything. It was a good truck. I might cry thinking about it. No, I'm just kidding. It was a good truck, though. But the point I'm making is I did it and I regretted it. Your wife or your husband, they're not a car. Don't go trading them in. Don't go run around to other car lots. You know, if there's a problem in your marriage, whether it be between you two, whether it be with outside, whatever, if there's a problem, don't run to the arms of someone else. Run to your spouse. That's who you need to work things out with. Run to your spouse, guys especially, because we hear a lot about guys. And guys, yes, I know we're kind of getting the blunt end of this, but, you know, I guess sometimes you dig your own hole. But guys especially, you hear about a guy having trouble. He's depressed. It may not even be something with his wife. It may be something with a job, or it may be something with a coworker, whatever. And they go and run for comfort to someone else. Run to your spouse. Take care of things there. Work things out. You know, a lot of times we'll work out a problem with a coworker. We'll work out a problem with a friend. We'll even work out a problem with a stranger. But won't make the effort to go work it out with our own spouse. think about giving in. Once again, I say it, men especially, don't give in. Say no. Stay away from these temptations. Think with your heart. Think with your heart. You said you would honor your wife, then do it. If you cheat on your wife, you're disrespecting her. You're disrespecting God. You're treating her like trash, and yes, you're treating God like trash. You're not cherishing her. You've got to remember the wisdom of Proverbs. You've got to stay away from those people in those situations. We're all familiar with 1 Corinthians chapter 13. But I just highlighted a few for this point in time right now. Love is patient. Marriage, you need patience. And yes, sometimes with each other. But I'm also talking about just with life in general. You need patience. Love is kind. You know, I think of kind, I think of gentle. The little things. Do the little things. The little things mean a lot, especially to women. They can mean a lot to men, but mostly to the women. When you dated, you opened doors. You gave her flowers. You held hands. You put your arm around her. Unless your father-in-law smacked you away. But you did the little things. Don't let them fade away. Keep doing it. There's nothing wrong with it. Don't be afraid to do it. You know, holding hands, sometimes in life, you can get focused and you can get wrapped up on life. You can get wrapped up on the other aspects of marriage and overlook something as simple but yet meaningful as holding a hand. Think about this. One day that hand won't be there to hold. And you're going to sit there wanting so badly to hold that hand one more time. Take advantage of it now. Soak up the moments. Make the most of it. Love bears all things. It endures all things. Kind of goes with patience. Not just talking about with each other. I'm talking about with the curveballs that life throws you. A lot gets thrown at you. You got to bear all things, endure all things. And you do that by having love. Love for each other. Love for your marriage. Because it ends up by saying love never fails. The wedding ring. Been the symbol of marriage. Because the ring, obviously, is a circle. It's never ending. But if you think about that, look at it this way too. A ring. I've worn my ring since the day we got married. And it's taken on a lot. It's gotten hit, dinged, dirty, everything. Taken on scrapes, nicks, whatever. But it never breaks. It never loses its shape. It stays intact. Your marriage needs to do the same thing. Plant a flower garden. And real quick, because this is neat, I don't know if y'all can see that, but in the middle of that flower, there's a heart. How cool is that? But plant a flower garden. Two things. Guys, let's just be honest. You're going to have an endless supply of flowers to give her when you have to apologize, right? Yeah, right. But also for any time. Give her a flower. Surprise her. It's those little things. Love is kind. Do the little things. Surprise her. But also, you get to work together. You get to talk. You get to share time. Yes, guys, it can be done, and it is a good thing. You share time. You talk. It's wonderful. Plus, a flower garden can remind you of your marriage. You have to work at it. You have to be persistent. If you both work at it, it's a whole lot easier. You have to pull the weeds. You have to get the weeds out. Makes for a healthier, better flower garden. When you do this, it's going to grow into something beautiful. And with it growing, it becomes more full. It becomes stronger. It'll choke out the weeds on its own. Kind of take care of its own. Marriage is a good thing. We need to enjoy it. We need to be thankful for it. Be thankful for each other. And we need to hold it in high regard. Like I said, too many people today are throwing it by the wayside. They're treating it as just, and no offense to any boyfriend, girlfriends in here, but they're treating it like boyfriend, girlfriend. They're treating it like dating. It's not. It's marriage. It's the next step. It's the next level. It's something God said, do not separate it. Do not undo what I've done. It's very important. We all need to remember it. And I hope that y'all will take the thoughts and see that we need to refer back to the Bible as our pattern. And be thankful. Love each other. Remember, not only did you say yes, but your spouse said yes to you. Preparation, passion, persistence. Remember these. Practice these. And hopefully we'll all not only start out with good marriages, but those of us that's been married for a while will continue to have a marriage that will only grow stronger. If you're not a child of God, and you're here, and you want to make things right with the Lord, you have this opportunity. If you're a Christian, and you've fallen away, or you've stumbled and fallen, and you need to make things right with God, God said He would forgive you. If you have the need of either one of these, you now have this opportunity to come forward as we stand and sing.